This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Good morning and welcome to Guardian Radio AM. Today is Thursday, June 30th, and it's a little after 11 a.m. in the morning. And once again, this is C.A. Nuri, and I shall be your host for today's show as I talk about a trending thought of what could actually happen due to the impact of inflation upon low-income families. In an international report dated June 15th, 2022, it warns businesses to brace themselves, to prepare themselves for a rise in civil unrest and a rise in protests, right? So the cost of living crisis, followed by the heels of COVID-19 pandemic, is causing people to protest more and to agitate for change and because of limited resources. The report warns businesses to expect strikes, riots, violent protests, movements, basically at the end of 2022. In fact, businesses should prepare to respond to such civil unrest incidents. And they are warning people to just brace themselves. But before I get into all of that, because I have a guest, my guest today is Gamal Nuri, who is the proprietor of Preventive Measures, which is basically an asset protection business and a business continuity business. But I have some guests from the Cat Island Empowerment Development Association, who's going to be talking about the association itself and also about their fair that's going to be happening on July 9th on Saturday at Awaki Park. And I have the chairman and president, Arthur McDonald, and also the vice president, Anthony Johnson. And just so we can get a basic knowledge about the fair and the association itself, let me start with Arthur McDonald. What is CEDA, Cat Island Empowerment Development Association, CEDA?
Good morning, Mr. Nuri, and a pleasant good morning.
1 minute for me. Are you able to hear? Go ahead, pull the mic closer to you.
A pleasant good morning, Mr. Nuri, and a pleasant good morning, Bahamas. It's always good to be here. Guardian 96.9.
Good. But I want to know about your association, the Cat Island Empowerment Development and Development Association. What is it exactly?
Well,
is it an NPO that is registered? And
well, we are an association that is focused on the development of Cat Island, the entire island from north to south, from Orange Creek in the north to McQueen's and Port Howe in the south. Our organization was developed of a need to develop every settlement. If you are aware and are not aware that we have two major events, one in the north, which is the Rakin Street Festival. It's around June. And the other is in August. The regatta.
So it's CEDA as the group that organizes this?
No. I'm just telling you, our effort is to help the whole Cat Island and all the association throughout Cat Island, and also to help to develop the association that is attached to every settlement has an association. If they don't, they do things within the settlement to develop some things within the settlement to build their settlement.
Yes, sir.
What is happening now is that because the regatta and the Rakin Street Festival focus mainly on vendors, and then, of course, by extension, other persons who own hotels and motels get their place rented for that weekend. We want to ensure every event that happens in Cat Island is not only for a weekend, but it starts from one weekend to the next weekend, leading up to the regatta, leading up to the Rakin Street Festival.
So basically, you prove to be a support, and this ongoing
absolutely
support for organizations that exist already.
Absolutely. And also other things, and I'll tell you what we want to do. And our effort is our acronym for this event and our organization is TEAM, Together, Everyone Achieves More, meaning that we want to work together with all Cat Islanders, with the government, with the local government that is in place, but all the, like I say, all the settlements that has an association, and those that don't have an association. There are things that is happening, as you were, Cat Island is one of the most historical and cultural islands of the Bahamas. And what we want to do is ensure that this island develops strategically by from settlement to settlement. And whatever the persons and the leading person in every society or every settlement wants to do, we're going to assist them. And that's what we're all about. It's trying to promote the regatta, try to promote the Rican Spirit Festival and get investment there. And most importantly, we want to help, we want to support the children's home in Old Bight, Cat Island.
I didn't know that Cat Island had a children's home.
Yes.
Okay. And it says in Old Bight, Cat Island?
Cat Island, yes. We want to assist the high school children. We want to create a scholarship fund for the North and South Cat Island.
And when you say scholarship fund, what do you mean by that?
Well, assist them with going to UB.
Okay. So yeah. it's going to be locally based in terms of supporting them for
yes. University of Bahamas, that's correct. And we want to assist the older folks there. There are some things that some older folks may not have the assistant, even though they get maybe old age pension, even though they get maybe some assistance from their children. All the time, they may not, you know, older folks may not ask for assistance. We want to go on the ground in Cat Island and find out what are the regular needs that the old folks may be needing.
But this organization is in Nassau, right? New Providence.
Yeah.
How is there branches in Cat Island at this present time that you communicate with?
Let me explain to you. We are all Cat Islanders.
Mm-hmm.
I born, grew there, left there at the age of 19, a man actually. I know families from one end of the island to the next, and every settlement. My old man was involved with a lot of local government. You can chat local government, but I went to school on Boat High School. I went to school in Arthurstown for the most part. My last year, I went to Old Bight High. I was very involved in sports and the community within Cat Island. So I am fully aware of all the things. My father was a Baptist preacher. And he worked with Dr. Leonard McDonald, and he worked with Henry Pratt. Henry Pratt was in charge of the South, and he was in charge of the Baptist Church in the North.
So if other Cat Islands who live in New Providence want to get in contact with you, how do they get in contact with your association?
Well, our numbers are as follows. My number, and Mr. Johnson is here. He's going to give you his number when he speaks. My numbers are 328-2424. And
say that again.
328 24 hours. 328-2424. Very easy to remember. 477-2424 and 818-5133. And we want to help Cat Islanders and help what's going on there.
Okay, let me move on to Anthony Johnson, who's the vice chair of the association, the Cat Island Empowerment and Development Association. You have an event on July 9th, which is Saturday, and on the Awaki Park. Right? Can you tell me what can I expect when I come out there?
Well, you, on Saturday, the 9th of July, everything starts about 11 o'clock at MAC. And we're going to go through until 9 o'clock that night. You can prepare yourself once you get there to taste some of the finest food, all different kinds of food, whatever you want. We would have there for you some beautiful music, wonderful music.
And you say beautiful music. Cat Island is known for rake and scrape. Will
yes.
there be any rake and scrape artists there?
We're going to have some of those people, but they won't be performing live, but they would be there with their music.
So who's who of Cat Island who lives in New Providence and who going back would be there? And, of course, you'd have DJ music.
Yes. Even Mr. McDonald even invited the singing bishop.
Okay.
Yes, he'll be in the house.
Nice.
Yes. Along with some other ones.
Yes, along with some other ones, the Ramming Brothers. And you have, what is his name now?
Yes. So it's going to be like a reunion.
Yes,
for Kent Islanders who are living in New Providence, mm-hmm. and also people who want to experience mm-hmm. what Kent Islanders have.
Yes, and the media is going to be there as well. We're going to have a reception, a beautiful reception that evening from 4 o'clock until 7 o'clock. I can't say who. I wouldn't
give for all our sponsors. Yes, for all our sponsors. Okay. Yeah, sponsors.
But it's going to be unique. And Mr. Janiri, I'm certain that you will be there.
No, I'm going to show up. I love a Family Island rake and scrape type music and atmosphere, so I'm definitely going to pass.
McDonald said he has something special for you.
Free things?
He has a special... Yeah, it's
well, for you.
For you. Free. He told me the other day, say, Anthony, say, you don't like it. I say, you can cook McDonald's. I say, man, I have a special thing. Yeah. I say, McDonald. I say, what is
there's
special
nobody
stuff?
From Kent Island.
That's good. But I see I have a caller ready. Producer, let that caller through. Let's see if they have a question for McDonald or Mr. Johnson. Go ahead, caller. Thank you for calling.
Mr. Dewey.
Hey, it's a pleasure to hear you, Sparky.
Hey, how you doing? You know, no disrespect from. Let's go back a little while. He used to call it the Out Island, you remember, one time ago?
Uh-huh.
He used to call it the Out Island. Now we call it the Family Island because once you was in the capital, any other island was out island. Now everything is a family island. So now New Providence, or what they call Nassau, is also a family island now. And you made mention about something they have in some function on Arawaki.
July 9th on Saturday on Arawaki Park.
So let me correct you now, okay?
Urban Development Association will be having...
Okay, let me correct you now because I've been trying to correct a lot of children because it seems like the old people get lost.
Mm-hmm.
Arawaki don't have a park.
No?
Arawaki have a fishing port.
They have a fishing port.
You have the Western Esplanade
mm-hmm.
has a park.
Yeah.
We call now their fish fry.
Mm-hmm.
Arawaki, you have to go over a little bridge
mm-hmm.
or causeway to get the Arawaki. Am I right or wrong?
You sound like you're right.
I sound like. But if you go and tell your children that you're going down to Arawaki and you take them to fish fry, you mm-hmm. lie to your children.
I understand.
Because you didn't take them over Arawaki. Now, what I was wanting to say before I go in regards to the Family Island,
mm-hmm.
it seems that all the Family Island situation from the time I was growing up, it depends on political whoever in power. For example, when you go to Long Island always UBP or FNM because they say the PFP never did that for Long Island.
Mm-hmm.
So when you go to Cat Island, they say, hey, no government ever do that for nobody unless the government person comes from Cat Island.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm saying, like this gentleman say he left Cat Island when he was 9, right? He came to New Providence. If everybody keep leaving the islands when they're young, coming to New Providence to school, then I understand all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But if they never go back home to build up the island, they're going to always be in that predicament. If the people from the island who born there and from there don't go back to build up the island, you know who will build it up? The foreigners can come in and buy all the land, buy all the nice beach property and everything.
Sparky.
And all the people from the family islands...
I'm trying to promote the Cat Island Empowerment Development Association big event that is happening on Saturday, July 9th at Arawaki. And all kind of guests are coming because I see it's going to be who's who and Cat Island is going to be there. And also they're going to have a display of food, a display of activities, and I'm kind of excited. But Arthur McDonald, go ahead.
Yeah, I want to say the Nurses Association will be there. They'll be doing cholesterol check. Sugar testing and blood pressure testing. In addition, we're gonna have some other businesses there on display, displaying what they have to offer there. Johnson, you wanted to say something?
Yes, McDonald. Yes, we are aware. Our fish fry. That's what we said. The cultural center.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Okay, but Saturday is going to be a unique day in Nassau
mm-hmm.
for not just Cat Islanders, but for everybody, all Bahamians, all visitors who want to come.
Mm-hmm.
We are there for them. We will welcome them. We want them to enjoy the taste of Cat Island. For those people that would like to contact me, my telephone number is 814-6642. Or 805
Okay. Okay, excellent. Yeah. So I'm speaking with Arthur McDonald and Anthony Johnson, who are the chair and the vice chair of the Caribbean Island Empowerment Development Association, who's having an event on July 9th, which is Saturday, on our Key Park, or the Western Esplanade, as it was said. And I just want to invite people to come down there to see what they're doing in Canada. You know, it's for a good cause. You see they're doing some sponsorship for the children's home there, which I didn't know about. I'm going to try and investigate on. And also they're trying to create funds for a scholarship for Kelly Island students to come to New Providence for the University of Bahamas. But before you go, go ahead.
I just want to mention that every person who are from Kelly Island or descendants of Kelly Island, many people who are descendants from Kelly Island never been there. We have a registry for every settlement. We have a book registry for every settlement, all 16 settlements, we have a book registry. We want to put your regular name. If you have a name like Nuri, that's not from Kelly Island, but your mother is a Stubbs from Kelly Island. We want Nuri, then Stubbs, and then your name, your email, and your phone number, so we can contact you and let you know what is happening in the settlement that you're originally from. So we have a registry for all of the settlements of Kelly Island, so you can come out and register your name, have some fun and get your blood pressure checked and then meet some of your families.
Yes, this is like there. A big family reunion.
Absolutely.
But I have one more call before I go on a break. Producer, let me let this call come through and then I go on break right afterwards. Go ahead, caller.
Hi, good morning.
Go ahead.
I want to ask the gentleman, will you all have flower cake?
Will you all have flower cake?
Yes, we're going to have... Everything you want. Yeah. Coconut cake, the bunny cake, the flower cake. Yes, we'll have those things.
Yeah, because other people don't make it the same. It don't taste good. I like the Cat Island one.
Yes, flower cake tastes just as good, man. but I let that go. Definitely, you come out there, you'll have your flower cake.
I will. Thank you.
Thank you very much, producer. You've listened to Guardian Radio in the AM. On the other side of the break, you can call me at 323-6232 and 325-4316, 325-4259. As we talk about what to do if there is a riot, what to do if there's a strike at your business. We'll be right back.
The most important thing in life is family. And whenever you need reliable advice, you look to the people you know you can trust. At J.S. Johnson Insurance Agents and Brokers, we earn our clients' trust every day. Whether it's home, motor, travel, or commercial insurance, we've got you covered. Call 397-2100 or visit jsjohnson.com.
J.S.J., J.S.J., J.S. Johnson Insurance.
The new Guardian Radio app is here. Listen live to all our Guardian Radio shows and live video stream select programs in our studio. Get information about Guardian Radio shows and our hosts. Send messages, including text, email, and even call. All from our amazing new Guardian Radio app. Download it free today in your App Store for your Apple device or Play Store for your Android device. The all-new and improved Guardian Radio app.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
And welcome back to Guardian Radio AM. This is C.A. Nuri, and I'm having a conversation with Gamal Nuri, who is the proprietor of Preventative Measures, who is based in an asset protection management company and a business continuity company. And the reason why I called you, I was reading an article an online article, which says that all mid-income countries, which includes the Bahamas, should expect civil unrest on the later part of 2022. They warn that there'll be a lot of union strikes. They warn that there'll be a lot of protests because of what is happening in Ukraine, the war with Russia, and because of the inflation prices. And I'm saying, what? What kind of preparedness they need to do? And I'm saying, and I start wondering, does this mean the Bahamas also, or are they just talking to them foreign countries, those European countries, those African countries? But it also mentioned the Caribbean. And I started to think back. I remember one time they blocked the bridge, right? And I remember they blocked the bridge and tourists who were coming over could not pass. And I remember at this time I was working for the big hotel over there, and we could have seen the bridge. That's before they put that next building there. And we saw tourists walking over the bridge with their suitcases. And I'd like to know, is there a plan that you know of? Can business prepare for that? How can they prepare for something like that?
Hey, good morning, Cecil. Good morning, Bahamas. It's a pleasure to be here. Certainly there is a plan. I think it goes without saying the trends that the Bahamas and certainly the world is seeing demands that business operations put into place at the immediate, an emergency management plan, and then subsequently a crisis management plan, and after such, a business continuity plan. And those things sort of follow one after the other if the initial emergency response does not hold up. So certainly, as we watch global trends, and this is one of the things I wanted to also sort of dive into a bit too, the difference in understanding what security does versus what policing is. And we continuously harp on this proactive measure. So having a crisis management plan developed and having it implemented is certainly a security initiative where you are reading the trends in your work environment. If you are selling fish versus selling pizza versus selling hospitality in the hospitality industry, there are going to be certain risks that are going to be inherent to your particular industry. So how do you manage those risks? How do you manage it? Like you asked, you develop what is called a crisis management plan, which is sort of a linchpin between if it isn't too bad, which is an emergency, and if all hell breaks out, which is business continuity. So yes, there are ways businesses can do that, and certainly that increases their survival ratio or how the impact affects their operations.
And you mentioned crisis management plan, and I would like to know: is there a need to have a crisis management department in your business? I see you have a plan, but should there be someone who basically spearheads that? Is there a need for such?
Well, I wouldn't say. Let's say, depending on the size of your business and the resources you have, I don't think there's a need to have a crisis management plan. A crisis management department. Let me correct that. You certainly would want to have a plan and have individuals who have been trained or exposed to that type of actioning be on your team. For example, if you are in the business of selling pizza, if you're having a crisis every day selling pizza, then something's wrong. But certainly you want to have your team trained and if only how to use the fire extinguisher. Okay, so but you don't need a fire extinguisher department in your pizza selling business, but you want your team to know that hey, if there is a fire, and to prevent this escalating into a crisis, team members should be trained on how to use a fire extinguisher. Similarly, if you're in a restaurant, it's expanding that scope. Your team members should know how to do first aid, if only how to manage basic choking actions, if somebody chokes on whatever they're eating. So no, you don't need a first aid department in your restaurant business, in your banking business, in your hotel business, but certainly you want persons who are able to manage that incident when it occurs so it does not escalate, jeopardizing the life of the individual and certainly jeopardizing your reputation. So definitely a knowledge of the response, but not necessarily a department dedicated to it.
So how does a business know that that there is a crisis? I think maybe regular operation and these things happen. So how do they identify that, no, I need to come up with a plan if something untoward, unnormal happens?
Yeah, how does a business know it? I think a business that is operating in any environment realizes what they're exposed to. If you are operating, using the restaurant, for example, if you're operating a restaurant on a seafront, then you know that you're exposed to flooding.
Yes.
You're exposed to certain things based on where your business is located. So that alone tells you that, hey, we're working on a waterfront, so there's a possibility that our business can be flooded. So how do we manage flooding? Do we have water pumps in place? Do we have mops in place? Do we have a bucket system in place? Something to manage that. If your work, if your business is something dealing with, let's say, chemical agents in some industrial plant, then you know that there's a, but there are potential for accidents, for leaks, whether it's intentional damage or just human error. Your business can be exposed to toxic, or your customers can be exposed to toxins. So you want to now have something in place to manage that particular risk. So really, if you're in business and you're being real with yourself, then you would appreciate the there is a need to have contingencies, is another word that persons use. Contingencies to your operation, and one of them is a crisis response plan or a crisis incident management plan, that type of thing. So certainly.
So I'm thinking small businesses. That's why I keep on pressing this, right? Most small businesses don't have the expertise to implement what you are saying. They know that they're at risk, but they don't know what they are at risk for. Is there any type of checklist that they can say, oh, I never even considered these things. Let me try to implement these things for the next time.
I don't want to get you in trouble, right? But it is what it is, right? That's what preventative measures is for. Preventative Measures is a management company.
Oh, Preventative Measures, your company.
I'm listening to
Preventative
Measures. Say it again. I like how it sounds.
Okay, Preventative Measures. Go ahead.
Your Preventative company. Measures does exactly that. It assists businesses who do not have that expertise in-house, and it's a management service. So you outsource, just like you would outsource, let's say, human resources. You outsource your accounts. You outsource your crisis management planning and your response to a company like Preventative Measures. Now, I know we're on Guardian, and I don't want to push the point too much, but that's exactly what you can do. Now, in absence of that, if you decide to go a different route, certainly there are checklists, which Preventative Measures can also provide for you, by the way.
So we can call you and get a checklist.
You can call me and get a checklist. Yeah, but not for free, by the way. Yeah.
Can't be advertising.
No. I'm not advertising.
No, just listen. Go ahead.
Okay.
Go ahead. But moving on, right? The article I read,
sure,
right, mentions that we need to brace, particularly business, that they need to brace themselves for strikes in the upcoming year. Like, this is real. Because of the economy, there'll be a number of unions complaining. How is that? Can you have a risk management system for something like that?
Yeah, certainly. I think, again, and if you, when we expand this whole approach, we have to understand that these are a lot of articles. We don't have a lot of academia research here in the Bahamas as regards to security loss prevention and certainly crisis response, right? However, we have to appreciate that what is inherent to the Bahamas, our culture, our economic structure, how does that article that you read or any other resource coming in, because you know there are global bodies like the United Nations, the IMF, all of these different organizations speak to our economic state and how we're being rated. How does that relate now to people's response and people's need for certain commodities? And you as a business person who is providing a certain commodity, will the public get anxious if they're, let's look at COVID, using a recent example. Public went crazy for toilet tissue. Mm-hmm. Who would have thought in the Bahamas in 2021 that toilet tissue would have become such a needed commodity? And really, when you do the research, it wasn't necessarily a scarcity of that particular item. However, social media fueled certain types of an outlook that this is what you need to get. You need to get water. You need to get batteries. So there's a run, as we would say. There's a run on the food store. And mind you, they have toilet tissue coming out of a zoo, for lack of a better term, right? And so there's no diminished supply. However, the panic in society causes people to do some things. So businesses have to now look at that. What does my commodity, does my item that I provide, could that create a panic? Baby formula, for example, that's another commodity that you would think that it's not necessarily this, everybody doesn't need it, but if I don't have it, then I'm going to go in and get some, if only for a friend, that I'm going to help them build up the supply, and you're going to stockpile on these types of items. So monitoring these things, and this is what, a true security practitioner, loss prevention practitioner looks at. They don't just look at the reaction. They look at what are the trends, what can we do to manage, what resources are in place to manage it. Because we see it, but we may not see the need for it now. There's a meme going around where you look at the security budget before an event and you look at the security budget after the event. And the security budget before the event is pennies in the jar. After the event, the security budget, the jar is overflowing with money. That's policing. That's policing. That's a reaction to an event. But security crisis management speaks to a proactive approach where you put resources training in place so that it's like an insurance policy. You put that resource in place so you it's better you have it than wish you did.
Yeah. So you mentioned security. What's the difference between policing and security? And how important is security in a business, for a business?
Well, both of them are important. The major difference is one is preemptive, one is proactive. One tries to anticipate a loss event, and that's security. So security is proactive. It anticipates, okay? It does not wait for something to happen. It tries to prevent something from happening. As simple as a wet floor and a sign saying, hey, slippery when wet. That's security. As simple as you go into an area in the night, there are lights up so you can have visual. Not so much you can see where you're going, but also see what's coming to you. Mm-hmm. So that's security.
That's security again.
Now, policing or law enforcement says, hey, when there's an issue, when something is broken, a rule, regulation is broken, then we take action. So you can have, you know, I always use when I'm doing a background investigation, the police record, or we call a character certificate, it says the person has not been convicted, but it doesn't speak to the risk that they could present to you. So they've not been convicted, that's a reputational issue. You don't want to, you may not want to hire someone who's been convicted of an offense. And then you also manage that, which suggests that the person, if they are convicted of something, they may do that particular ill in your environment. However, that does not speak to the true risk that the person provides. You want to understand what is their behavior. What do they do? What do they do when no one is looking? They may have not been convicted, but how many acts have they actually committed? So you have to manage that and understand, hey, policing is we respond, we react. And we based on what the breach is, the reaction could be very much a pat on the wrist, or you get the full brunt of force from law enforcement, meaning as much as taking a life to manage the particular wrongdoing. Security is saying, hey, we don't want that to happen at all. It's like, you know, I use an example. You go to a hotel and the hotel says, oh, we don't have robberies at all, versus the hotel saying, oh, we have caught all of the robbers. Which hotel do you want to go to? You wanted to go to the facility that does not have the incidents at all versus the facility that's catching everybody.
Responding to it.
Exactly. So that's what security, in a nutshell, security versus policing or law enforcement.
And how important is security?
I think security is one of those things that transcends every environment, it's 24/7, 7 days a week.
What about just having security at the door to open it and let me come out?
That is utter nonsense. Oh. That's utter nonsense. Security is not a doorman, and I don't support that at all for you, because you're not getting the best bang for your buck. Unless you have an elderly person, somebody's handicapped.
Who's supposed to spray your hand with sanitizer?
You can have an automated machine, or have persons have that machine standing on the side. Not the security, no, man. No, that's utter nonsense. That's utter nonsense. Or taking your temperature, as a matter of fact. Because what is security supposed to do then? When you present a temperature, they're going to deny your entry. Where's the signage? Here's security again. Where's the signage to support that if you meet us, if you don't meet our regulated temperature, which is whatever it is, I don't know, because nobody ever said anything.
No one never stopped me.
Nobody ever said anything that this is what your temperature should be. Can the security stop you from coming into the building?
I don't know. Can they?
No. Where's the policy? Where's the signage? You walk into a building and they say to you, you're subject to search. Then you understand that here's somebody who is going to execute that policy for the business. Mm-hmm. However, you have not supported the action of the security in reading the temperature and saying, no, Mr. Nuri, you can't come in because your temperature reads 97, 98, or 99, or whatever the threshold is. In fact, what is the threshold? You haven't met that requirement. Or we want to sanitize your hands. I don't want my hands to be sanitized. What's to stop that person? The only thing that we see supported out there is mask required before you enter.
Yes.
Now you see that's
enforced.
That's enforced because what provides the authority? There's signage there telling you that you cannot enter unless you wear a mask. Where's the signage that says you cannot enter if your temperature either is too high or too low? What is the parameter in place?
This is Guardian Radio AM. We're having a conversation with Gamal Nuri, who is talking about asset management, crisis management, risk management, the importance of security, the difference between policing and security in general. And we are basically responding to an article which would suggest that in the latter part of 2022, we should expect some social unrest in terms of businesses, in terms of strikes, in terms of demonstrations. And I wanted to know business continuity with that. How can a business continue if they were closed? And on the next side of the break, where we're going to go on right now, we're going to speak about how can business reopen if they were forced to shut down for a minute. This is Guardian Radio AM. I'll be right back.
The most important thing in life is family. And whenever you need reliable advice, you look to the people you know you can trust. At J.S. Johnson Insurance Agents and Brokers, we earn our clients' trust every day. Whether it's home, motor, travel, or commercial insurance, we've got you covered. Call 397-2100 or visit jsjohnson.com.
J.S. Johnson Insurance.
The new Guardian Radio app is here. Listen live to all our Guardian Radio shows and live video stream select programs in our studio. Get information about Guardian Radio shows and our hosts. Send messages, including text, email, and even call. All from our amazing new Guardian Radio app. Download it free today in your App Store for your Apple device or Play Store for your Android device. The all-new and improved Guardian Radio app.
This is Guardian Radio, 90.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
And welcome back to Guardian Radio AM. This is C.A. Nuri, and I wanted to pose a trapsy question to Mr. Nuri, right? I'm not sure if you follow me, but I've been talking about LAN recently when I'm on air, right? And that there is some kind of conversation, loud conversation that has happened on Jamaica Road where residents are claiming government crown land for themselves. And recently there was an engagement where they had the police officers and defense force officers basically stand against the residents there or persons who were legally squatting, right? And there was a confrontation, that's the right word I wanted to use. And I felt uneasy, and I know you're a security specialist, and I felt uneasy having the military present in a civil society issue. And the reason why I said that is the persons who were involved was asking the military to identify yourself, to I will record you, I will put you at bay with my cell phone. You don't have a right to detain me. And I'm kind of uneasy, again, moving on from the conversation about potential civil arrest in the future. Give me your expert opinion on that in terms of using military on police missions, for lack of a better word.
I think we have to be clear, too. It becomes kind of gray. First of all, let's understand that our police force, the Royal Bahamas Police Force, is what you would term as a national police force, and it's what you would categorize as semi-military, whereas our defense force, the Royal Bahamas Defense Force, is full military. Now, how they are used based on what the threat is, it could sometimes become very gray. The use or the deployment of military in a civilian environment should be an absolute last resort. However, a military operation that was not intended for civilians because of the makeup of the country, because of just things beyond your control, could result in military personnel being exposed to the civilian population. Again, I can't speak, I mean, in the minutes I can't speak to what the dynamics may be, but let's take, for example, a civil unrest, which we started, what this topic is about, right? So that civil unrest gets to a point where the police are overwhelmed by the agency or the group that is doing the demonstration, that is causing the disruption, then the government and via through whatever protocols, whether it's an order given by the governor general, whatever the case may be, not so much, you know, the Ministry of National Security has a role to play, but that's certainly a job or a deployment that will come under the authority of the Prime Minister and the governor general. You may have to deploy military into a civilian environment because the situation has escalated to that point.
So my question is, I understand the police has been peace officers. They're there to promote peace, right?
Right.
I'm not necessarily sure if military officers could do that. Where there can be a and for lack of a better word, a shove-in type thing or a securing space type thing with the police officers. I'm saying that if you challenge a military officer, you might get shot. And I'm not sure if Bahamians are aware of such a things like that.
Well,
in terms of civil disobedience and such.
Well, that speaks again to the rules of engagement for the military in that particular environment. Does the rules of engagement allow them to use that level of force? And it's interesting.
You see them big guns they had?
Yeah, but again, that's where they are. But the police are carrying the same guns. There's no difference between the armament of the police force and the armament of the defense force. But it's rules of engagement and where you would utilize the police versus where you would utilize the defense force. Police are usually traditionally utilized in a civilian environment dealing with urban situations, and these firearms, and I know that you stressed on this word peace. These firearms, because they're in the hands of law enforcement, police, military, they are peace-making devices. Now, some persons would say, "Oh no, it can't. How could a gun or a firearm be considered?" Because it's the person who's using it is the intent behind that. And sometimes situations may require an escalation of force up to taking of life to regain order and to regain peace. It's an unfortunate reality that we have to accept. I think one of the major issues is if you are having your military on a regular basis used as police officers, I think that's where you get the problem. You get the problem, and I'm seeing on my daily routine, I'm seeing military personnel, which right now is only our defense force, taking a active role in traditional or everyday law enforcement or policing operations. That desensitizes the civilian populace to the military's role. And that's why I think that causes the aggressiveness towards the military when they present themselves, because they're seen every day. So you would have this aggressive behavior because Bahamians, and not just Bahamians, I don't like to just put us in
that. Familiarity is cause contempt.
Yes, exactly.
See, and I put it in, juxtaposed to Jamaica. One minute the residents will cause a fuss with police officers, but when you see the military come on, with the big tank of trucks come on, they just calm right down because it's a different temperament.
Exactly. And Jamaica's a very good example. Jamaica's a very good example where you would see the military moving, but they're not moving in conjunction with the police. Mm. The military is moving with the military.
Who's in charge when you see both police and military together?
Who's in charge?
Yeah, the military and the police force.
That depends on which what is in play. Is there a civil authority in play?
Crown land. I want to know who was in charge then.
That depends on if civil authority is still in play or martial law.
No, I mean, talk about martial law.
No, yeah, but that's your question. Has martial law been declared?
No,
by the governor.
We talk about that land thing.
Well, if you're talking about that land thing, then at that point, civil law is in play because the police then have that jurisdiction. The military may have been there to provide support, okay? And this is, my opinion, right?
Yes. Exactly.
They may have been there to provide support, but that was still a civil activity. However, they were front and center, and that was, and that's one of those, you know, that's one of those gray areas that you can't always have ideal circumstances. Why they were brought out and why they were used, I can't speak to that. However, to say that they can't is not necessarily the case. But what I think what encourages the aggressiveness towards them is that the familiarity, the desensitizing of the public, because you see them every day now. They're not some group that's kept away, which they should be, and used only for true operations where they should be the authority. They are now mixed and mingled with law enforcement, with policing. And so how do I differentiate between the two? It becomes very difficult.
Especially when everyone have camouflage clothes.
Especially when everyone, that's another
kettle of fish. I have my camouflage short pants, you know. You can't
that's another kettle of fish.
Anyway, I have a comment saying, I disagree with your guess. Seeing a security upon entering the facility, sometimes by a security just opening the door for you, is a great deterrent to crime. So there's someone who disagreeing with you sanitizing people.
Yeah, I'm not certainly not taking away that security should be front and center and be visible, but I don't think they should be tasked with that particular duty. So I guess we're meeting in the middle. Security should be front and center. They should be visible. They should be out there looking alert, but they should not have a thermometer in one hand and a sanitizing spray bottle in the other hand. That's just so I hope they understand where I'm coming from. That security's hands should not be engaged with a thermometer or engaged with a sanitizing or should be locked into opening and closing the door. No. So they should be front and center, but those tasks, no.
I see I have another caller there, producer. Allow that caller to get through and see what type of questions they have. Go ahead, caller. Thank you very much.
Thanks. I agree with the security guy because at the end of the day, if a security officer, and I've been one, so I can tell you from experience, is busy taking temperature or holding door for you. Because some of these larger companies have more than one way in, you know. And while I'm holding the door for you, I'm distracted by the other person who could be easily slipping in there to do crime or harm or whatever the reason is. Where if I am in position, I focus on the door, watching everybody coming and going, I tend to pick up more and easier when I'm focused than when I'm unfocused. I think a security officer, the company I worked for, they had this policy, security officers must open the door. Mm-hmm. So you're staying distracted. So I don't think it's right for security officers to open no door because you are distracted. Like it or something happens, then you will blame the security officer when you have the officers doing the job of a doorman.
Exactly. And I think the only exception to that rule is certainly if you're dealing with an elderly person, a disabled person, the security officer can assist in that process, but that should not be their assigned task for that. And if you have, you're talking about one person, suppose you have 20 persons coming into that door, the security officer to hold that door. So it really takes away from what their role is. And I think what happens is a lot of businesses do not understand what a security officer is for. And I'm amused when I do seminars. Oh, well, they're not doing anything. Well, a security officer is a trained observer. They are a preventative tool that's in place to monitor. And their presence, their alertness, certainly can contribute to this you know, deterring crime from happening in your business.
Thank you very much, Colin.
Thank you.
And you mentioned seminars. I think you're having a seminar coming up soon.
Yes, I have an event coming up on July 7th, Crisis Incident Management. It's a team approach.
And
it's assisting, it's designed to assist businesses, small, medium, and large, to develop a crisis management plan. And it's not for, you know, I get hurricane. You know, hurricane is only one event. And a hurricane is really, when you look at a risk rating, a hurricane is really a very low risk rating because you know the season, you're getting all of these warnings, you can remove yourself from the threat. You're talking about incidents where you don't have an opportunity to remove yourself.
Give me your cell phone number again, quickly.
My number is 357-9949. And I can be reached. I'm on Facebook at Gamal Nuri. I'm also at LinkedIn on Gamal Nuri and Preventative Measures.
Thank you very much. This is Guardian Radio and AM, CA Nuri. I'll see you tomorrow. Have a nice day.